No, that's
okay. So I am again happy to introduce to you Vesna and Florian. They are from Ripe NCC, and today, as you see, they will tell us some new developments on the address policy and the community tools. Stage is yours.
Hi. Well, this was a preliminary title, so some of you might find this not as exciting as the previous talk, but actually what most of you always surely wanted to know, were curious about, is what is new with RIPE. And we have 60 slides and only 30 minutes, so I'm going to speak really fast. No. Actually, we are going to cover just three major topics. Why is it important to take part in the policy development, routing information service, and very briefly, RIPE Atlas. So I'm Vesna.
I'm Florian.
I'm a community builder at RIPE NCC.
I work in the global information infrastructure team. We run things like the Kroot name server and the Auth DNS cluster, also the routing information service, and sometimes the boss makes me touch Hadoop for the Atlas backend storage.
So we'll be taking turns, and I'll be the first one, hopefully less than 10 minutes, telling you how can you change the addressing policies. Well, why is this even important? Well, the addressing policies of RIPE actually influence how do you run your business if you need IP addresses, either a business or maybe your hobby project. So how are these addresses in general distributed? Well, it's a hierarchical system, and there are five regional internet registries, one for every continent, and in Europe, that is RIPE NCC. So how many of you know the difference between RIPE and RIPE NCC? Let me see a show of hands. Okay, I won't be happy until all of you actually raise your hands. So this is one of my minor missions in life to teach you what is the difference between RIPE and RIPE NCC. Well, the first giveaway is the name. It's completely different. One is RIPE, which stands for Réseau IP Européen. Pardon my French. The other one is RIPE NCC, which stands for RIPE Network NCC. Network Communication Coordination Center. Sorry, I don't even know it myself. How can I expect from you to know it? So anyway, there are actually three major differences. RIPE is a community. So basically, all of you are RIPE. RIPE NCC, on the other hand, is a company. It's a not-for-profit membership association where we work for. RIPE, that is you, develops these addressing policies. So there are policy proposals, there are discussions, and in the end, there is a consensus. RIPE NCC, on the other hand, implements those policies. So we distribute address space. And then finally, in the end, it goes back to you, to the ISPs, and then you have to deal with those policies in the day-to-day work. And the third difference is RIPE community has two large meetings per year. Next year, they will be in Budapest and in Dubai. RIPE NCC, being a small organization, has at least two meetings per day. So these are the major differences. And how else does RIPE work? Well, there are working groups for every topic. And for example, address policy, DNS, routing, and then there is many more. And as you can see, there is also, some people that are grumpy and not very happy. And so all these discussions happen mostly at the RIPE meetings, but also on the mailing lists. And the top secret working group that you see there sometimes is also involved in some poetry and even singing. So you can find the videos of their singing also on YouTube. So these discussions happen on mailing lists. How many of you are subscribed to a mailing list? Ooh, this is great. Well, for some maybe friends of yours who don't really like mailing lists, we have a new thing. It's a Ripe forum. It's a web forum where you can post, and then those messages will actually end up on the mailing list. They will also end up in the web archive, so you can actually use the forum for reading the archives. And while you're at it, you can also grab the popcorn, because sometimes those discussions tend to get heated, especially if the topics are like really close to people's hearts. So mostly, currently, these discussions are about IPv6, because this is one of the resources that we are now mostly distributing. How does it work? Again, it's hierarchical. So Ayana gives larger blocks to regional registries, then we give aggregatable blocks. So this provider aggregatable allocations to local internet registries, and then they give them to end users. And there is some kind of strange address space, PI, provider independent. And this is one of the most recent policies that has been proposed. How many of you have heard about this policy proposal to change the PI assignments? Okay, so this is quite interesting because it's a German guy who suggested it from Freifunk. And I actually like this policy. So if for nothing else, please go to the Address Policy Working Group and give your opinion there, because I would like this policy to change. Some people still want IPv4. Well, I have bad news for you. It's not really new. There is no more IPv4. It's exhausted. It's gone. Scraping the barrel. There is still one little block of 1,024 addresses for every LIR, local internet registry. And apart from that, there are transfers. So you can transfer addresses from one company to the other. There are all kinds of rules and regulations about that in our PDFs that are going to be published. There are a lot of more information and links about this. And the very important thing for IPNCC is that you register the correct contact details in the WHOIS database after the transfer. So these policies are cyclical. So who can change the policies? You can change the policies. They are yours. They are Ripe policies, and please take part in them. Actually, I'm preaching to the converted here, because most of the people who have been taking part in the policy discussions actually come from Germany. So congratulations. You're very active. Who here is not from Germany? Can I see a show of hands? Ah. You people go home and take part, so that your country is also going to shine next time when we have this presentation. Okay, so we will take questions afterwards. And this is the end of the first part.
Okay, so about the routing information service. We have a worldwide network of BGP collectors. We have them deployed at internet exchanges, and there we collect BGP data. When I looked up this number last week, we had nearly 700 peers at 18 locations, and around about 150 full tables. And most importantly, I think, we have over 15 years of history. So we have the collectors in these locations. It's a bit European-centric, but we're particularly proud of some of the new ones, for example, in South Africa. This is the historic overview. So the first one we had in 1999 is in Amsterdam, and some got decommissioned. And the interesting ones, or the new stuff, is starting with RC 18 to 21. We're calling them the new style RCs, but more on that later. So I said we collect all the data, so you can get the raw data, more than 15 years worth at that URL there. We also have a web interface, and we provide an API, and the web interface actually uses that API. So there's a good chance that the API actually works. So here's an example for the Ripeside web interface. If you're looking at the routing status, you end up here with the first overview. And turns out AS8365 has some V6 visibility problems. It's quite visible for V4, but there's some trouble with V6. And you can dig into. It turns out something is going on in Milan and in Paris. Not all the peers give out the full prefixes. Maybe worth looking into, if you care about V6. Not quite sure if it will ever catch on. Here's another thing that you can use for monitoring. So this updates, or you can set it to update once new data comes in. And you can see the announcement and withdrawals, the frequency of those. However, the trouble with this is the old style data, so we have quite a delay on this, on the order of hours. With the new style RCs, we can do something nicer. We can stream data to you, and we have a demo for that. This uses WebSockets, and to be stream JSON data. And in the first column, the RC time, that's the time when this data was collected, and the delay is calculated on the web browser. So we have a delay of 0.1 seconds here for the first message, which came from RC21, which is in Zurich. So it took 0.1 seconds to get the data from Zurich to Amsterdam, through the whole processing pipeline, and then to the browser, which is quite fast. It's at least faster than on the order of hours. So a bit of history. So a colleague of mine did an internal presentation, and it was actually quite funny. So it started in 1999 with this setup. We have this one RC, and we have one RIS server, which is in Amsterdam. So this is quite cute. So in 1999, a full table was 60,000 routes. So this actually fit. Turns out the internet grows. And people figured out, well, yeah, this is not really scaling. And let's do it like this. This is pretty close to the old style RFCs. So we have the BGP speaker in various locations. And then we RSync the data to Amsterdam. However, people figured out, well, MySQL is not really scaling, so let's get rid of this. And so the interesting thing of this is, if you go to the routing policy work, to the routing working group, they had these presentations every year on new developments in RIS, and they were always like, yeah, so we thought we had scaling issues worked out. Turns out it's not really scaling, but now we have the better design, and this will totally work. And then you had the next year later have the same talk. So I'm here to tell you this. This time we really have this worked out, and I have proof for this, because we actually need two slides to show how this stuff works. So, excuse me. To be able to stream data, we switched from Quagga to ExaBGP. No, it's better if I show the other slides. So the old-style RFCs use Quagga, which has some problems. So it's a single-threaded, which is not a good thing on modern CPUs, and it locks up during table dumps. So it just sits there and writes a table dump to file and just goes, la 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 la, I can't hear you. And well, that's not good with BGP, because then your whole timer expires and you drop all the sessions. So better not do that. The other trouble with this is it kind of streams updates out, But to get them as a stream out, it's rather complicated. So yeah, we moved away from Quagga, and we're using XIBGP, which is still single-threaded, but it runs event-based, so it does not lock up. Also, we can run multiple instances of XIBGP, so it connects out. You cannot connect in. Well, technically you can, but we're not using that. So we can run an instance per CPU, or even multiple instances per CPU, and then have peerings on those instances. Also, it does a much, much simpler job. It does not have to keep any BGP state. It just does not care. The only thing it cares about is that it can keep the session alive. So it does the BGP state machine, but after that it just streams out data. And this streaming out is one line of JSON per BGP message, which is writes to standard out. And it forks up a process that gets this via standard in, and that process writes it into a directory queue. And so it's set up in a way that if this process dies, then it takes down XIBGP with it, which then tears down your session. Which is quite important for consistency reasons. You cannot ever lose a BGP message when you try to collect this data and have consistent state. If you're losing a message, you're losing an update, and then that's not in your in your routing table. That's bad. So what we really, really care about is never, ever lose a message. So the design is either the message is stored safely on disk, or the session goes down. And if the session goes down, that's also fine, because then you bring it back up and you start afresh. So we have the data on disk on the remote RC. And then we have, per directory queue, another process which drains this and shoves it from the remote RC to Amsterdam. And currently, to store it in a queuing system there. And currently, we are using for that RabbitMQ, which is really, really not performing for us for this. Because so the trouble with RabbitMQ, what it tries to do is you have one message, which is one BGP message, and you put it in there, and then it comes back to you. Yeah, I have stored this. Next trouble is we have a cluster of this, so we need to store it on three machines. So you put the message in, and RabbitMQ goes, oh yeah, I have this message. I store it here, and I store it over there, and there as well. And then it comes back to you and tells you, yeah, this is done. So you have this RC in Johannesburg, which is quite far away. So you have a high latency link. So this is not going to perform. So if you're bringing up a session, or if you're bouncing a session where you have a full view with 600,000 routes, that more or less comes down to 100,000 messages. RabbitMQ needs for this 20 minutes to sync up. So we can keep the steady state of updates, but if you're restarting a session, then it takes 20 minutes, which is kind of not good. Kafka is much better with this. So we currently run it in parallel. This can just keep up. We don't even know how fast it is, because we would need to measure it. What happens is, so you bring up the session, XIBGP slurps in the data, puts it on disk, and then you shove it over to Kafka, and it's just there. There's zero delay. So it depends on your remote BGP speaker. How fast can they give you the routes? Reason for that is that the on-wire protocol does compression. This stuff really compresses rather well. And you can shove in multiple messages, and, like 20,000 at a time, and then get the acknowledgement. So while you cannot ever lose a message, it's quite okay to duplicate a message. So we shove these 20,000 messages to Amsterdam, and then something weird goes on, and we can't work out if it's ever arrived there. Well, we don't care. We just shove it there again. So if you get an update message for this prefix, and then you get the very same update again, well, that doesn't mean anything. It's in your route. It's in your routing table. So there was this slide with the how we process this data, and I mentioned that the boss sometimes makes me touch Hadoop, and we use Hadoop for this. And there are some words about that, and I actually know some of these words. But yeah, it's not really interesting. So we process data. And yeah, that's it.
Thank you. So the last bit of our presentation together is how can you use the RIPE Atlas to measure your reachability. So mandatory introduction, RIPE Atlas is a global open distributed network of measurement platform that is using hardware probes hosted by volunteers that are performing measurements, and we collect this measurement data like in real time, and then we store it. So it's now 5-6 years of stored data that we have. So I'm going to skip the question about who has heard about RIPE Atlas, because apparently everybody in Germany has heard about RIPE Atlas. Again, congratulations. You have the most active probes deployed, more than US. This happened actually this August after IETF, because Daniel Karenberg gave an interview at the RFC podcast, and then everybody from Germany requested the probe. And but then we actually didn't have any. So like you all had to wait until we got some more, and then we started shipping them. And then, yeah, now there's a lot of them deployed. Still, if you do want one, I have some with me, so you can find me later in the break. So I want to mention three things: the traceroute, the credits, and the hackathons. So this is the first one. So let me tell you a story. Before the RIPE Atlas existed, if some customer contacted you and said, oh, I have problems reaching your servers, then you had to go to the DNOG mailing list or NANOG mailing list and say, hey guys, can you please try to reach my server? This is the IP address, and do the traceroute from wherever you are, and then send me the output of that traceroute so that I can see. And then people would actually send it to the list, and everybody would be like, no, no, not to the list, just to him. And so now you don't really have to have friends anymore. You can actually just use RIPE Atlas for that. So with one click in our web interface, you can go there and say, like, do the traceroute from 1,000 probes worldwide, and then we are going to process the data and show it to you as several visualizations. So this is one of them. Well, it's not really 1,000, but yeah, here it shows like round trip time latency, color coded. And you can also download that data. There's an API for that. And yeah, you can do your own analysis. We also show them like all these results in a list with some table overview. And then we also have some even more fancy visualizations. This is something called latency mon. So this kind of visualization is available both for the traceroute and for pings and for DNS. So it actually groups the probes per country or per AS number, and then shows you these stacked graphs so you can see like where and when the problem has occurred. So apart from reachability, you can also see like some other problems. And of course, we had to go for the command line tools, because a lot of users of RIPE Atlas actually prefer this old-fashioned typing on the command line. So you can actually do this, like RIPE Atlas, and then measure, trace route, the number of probes, the where should they come from, and then just get the textual output that you can then process further with your other tools. So this is the free software. It's available on GitHub. We accept contributions, and there is also, this is included in a lot of existing distributions already. So you can install it either from GitHub, or it's maybe part of the system that you already use. So next topic is how is this all paid for? So the usage of RIPE Atlas is not gratis, because the system is actually billed and paid for by the contributions of either the volunteers who are hosting the probes or the RIPE-NCC members. And so those who contribute, they also earn so-called credits. And so in order to perform the measurement, so to take part in the system as a user, as a consumer, you have to pay with those credits. So you can earn them by hosting a probe, or if you are a RIPE-NCC member, every month you can claim 1 million credits. And there are other ways. You can also become a sponsor. You can host a different system, which is called RIPE Atlas Anchor, which is a bigger server, and then it earns you more credits. And for the first 8 lucky people here in the audience, you can also reclaim the voucher called DNOG 8, and then you will also get 1 million credits. So if you log in to RIPE Atlas and go to credits and then reclaim voucher, then you can get 1 million credits as a present. Also on RIPE Labs, we published an article about what are the other ways, how can you spend credits, how can you earn credits, so you can get more tips there. And finally, if you are a coder and if you like to play around with RIPE Atlas data, measurements, and other implementations of this kind of data, you can join our hackathons. We had 4 in the last 2 years. Next year, we will probably have another 2. They're great fun. The awards are also wonderful. It's always a box of stroopwafels, because apparently it's a Dutch thing. And I hope I'll see you there at some time. And so this is the end of our talk. So I hope that you have learned how to take part in RIPE Atlas policies, what can you use the RIS for, and a little bit more about RIPE Atlas. Are there any questions?
Vesna, this is Wolfgang. I feel old.
Oh,
because of course there was something before RIPE Atlas. Oh. It was called the Test Box Project.
Yeah, but we don't talk about that anymore.
And it had one feature I really, really liked, and that was the one-time latency measurement. Okay.
Do I hear that as a feature request? Okay, I'll take it back. Plus one, I see plus one there. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Max. I'm the guy with the IPv6 proposal. thank you. I have a question for the audience. I'd like to have a show of hands within the support of the proposal as it now stands, although the discussion phase was closed some days ago. Okay. Anybody against it or needs some changes? If so, please come back to me, haunt me, speak to me. Thank you.
Okay, any more questions on the talk? I don't see any, so let's thank our speakers.